that's something that's funny of how those different woods will. I think you've talked to me about this before, how you can cut an ash tree and just take it right in.
Yeah.
Just burn mm-hmm. right up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like I say, I'm talking about making baskets. I've worked with wood all my life. I grew up on a farm, and ever since I was 6 or 7 years old, I knew what wood to use and what to make. We always made all of our handles, all our axe handles, and mattock handles, and hammer handles, and pitchfork handles, and everything like that. And
yeah.
I had a great big old stove with a big warming clothes on it. Mother'd say, now I'm going to make a bunch of pies and I want some good wood. Well, I'd go out and cut an ash tree down and cut it up, and it burned as good green as it would dry. Yeah. Burned the. You know, I was telling my son's up here, he lives down in Putnam County, Bo Charlton. He's up here one day. We was up on the wood hill there cutting wood, and there's a big old scrubby ash tree that grew right in the pasture field. He's about 24 inches over. I was telling him about that. I said, now, you cut that and take it down there and just dry it. And he's telling me later, said I didn't believe it. Said, I thought any wood green couldn't. And he said, absolutely. Said, you put that in the fire and it gets burning. Said, that flame just blew like gas flame. Yeah. It burned just every bit as good green as it would dry.
Somebody told me that whenever they made these old ox yokes, they'd always make them out of river birch. You ever heard that?
No, I don't believe it did. I made a few yokes, and I've seen a few, and the favorite in back in my day when I knew anything about ox, my dad used to work cattle. Hog cattle.
Uh-huh.
And They made the yolks out of either yellow poplar or cucumber.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And I'll tell you something now. A lot of people don't realize it, but sassafras is an awful strong wood if you can find one big enough to make anything out. Mm-hmm. I made a ladder one time. I cut a big, long, tall sassafras and split it open,
uh-huh.
and then made hickory rungs and put in it, mm-hmm. made a ladder out. Man, I made the fine thing. I made pick apples with it.
Mm-hmm.
You just carry it, set it up anywhere light, you know, strong.
Hmm. Could you get one straight? Could you get a straight sassafras?
Mm-hmm.
That long?
Yeah, this earth is about 14 feet long. And,
yeah.
And I took a throw and got started on one end, just split it. Yeah. It's almost like it's been sawed.
Uh-huh.
You know, I had one sassafras tree up there, and I made a bunch of chairs and footstools, one thing or another. And I was up on the Williams River deer hunting one time, and they'd clear cut a bunch of ground land up there. They just cut them trees down, they'd haul them out to the landing and saw them up into logs. And there was a sassafras, a piece of sassafras there as big as that tree right there,
yeah.
where they'd haul that sassafras in, cut a little slice off the end of it, you know, make it a certain length. Every bit as big as that.
Wow.
One of the biggest ones I ever seen. I had one up here in the holler. It was 40 feet long and 40 foot tall up the first limb, and it was about 10, 11 inches over.
Yeah.
Split this straight, you can cut a piece out about 4 foot long, just split, just like it's been sawed.
Hmm.
Nice to work through, you can take it all nice.
I've heard of making chairs out of sassafras.
That there, one footstool in there, sassafras.
Is it?
I made them out of black walnut, sassafras, white walnut, and maple. Made most of them out of black walnut.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go up on the hill and find the walnut tree dead, you know, and stand up and dry.
Uh-huh.
I'd cut it down, use it up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever use a grain cradle?
Never have used one, though.
You've seen them, though.
Yeah, I have one. An old one.
You know, I don't know. I don't feel particularly old or nothing like that, but a lot of people don't realize. Now, I went out and I seen that there blacksmith class up there. I went up there and got talking to them. And my dad, we always had anywhere from 3 to 6 or 8 horses, always. And we kept them shod, and we kept our own, done our own sharpening. We sharpened all of our tools, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've shod horses ever since I was 12 years old. Of course, I ain't shod any lately because I ain't had no horses. Mm-hmm. But I used to shoe horses, never, didn't think a thing of it. And a lot of people think, well, my man knows in New York shoeing horses. And I made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shingles and peglings and stuff with the throw. Days and days, and I made hundreds of ties, hewed ties with a broad axe. Mm-hmm. That used to be the only cash money we had outside of cattle or something like that, was to go out in the winter and make cross ties. Mm-hmm. Done it for years. And I've cradled wheat, I've cradled oats. But now, you know, a lot of people, they learned making baskets. Like, for instance, their daddy or their grandpa or somebody learned to make baskets. But I never made a basket till after I was retired. Mm-hmm. I was 60-some years old, 63 years old, before I ever tried to make a basket. But I did have advantage of knowing wood, I'd work with wood. Mm-hmm. We used to be... Everybody raised corn, and you'd go out to pile corn, the corn would be up about so high, and you'd have your horse have it reined up and all like that, but he'd stop and take a bite of corn. Well, what you done, any corn field was practically this brush or woods out in the end of it. Just dive out in the end, let the horse cool off a little bit, and everybody carry a knife. Just cut you a hickory and peel it, and make a round thing, put 2 or 3 of the limbs, weave it, hold it like a basket, only you didn't have to weave it that good, and then just put a piece of the bark up over the head and just pull it up on his nose and run it back over his head, you know, and go ahead and plow corn. When he got done, why, he all hung it up out in the woods somewhere, and by the next year rotted, and he went to but where corn, you had to make another, and didn't take 10 or 15 minutes to make one. Mm-hmm. I'd done that all my life. I never, you know, never made a basket, but I made dozens and dozens of muzzles. And we had a coal mine up on the hill there, and still got it up there. Still got coal mine up there, but I don't use it anymore. And we used to pick the coal down. Take it with a pick. And then we got auger and an old belly auger and bore a hole and use black powder and shoot it. I've done it for the day. And you know, in sharpening a coal pick, they have to be hard like, but they've got to be tough. Mm-hmm. They gotta be tough, and if you get them the least bit too hard, they'll break. Mm-hmm. And we discovered there's a wet place right close to the black old blacksmith shop where we had the tool. And you can take something that you want to tamper, and you can get a certain heat on, blue heat they call it. And then you put it in water and you keep, you know, testing.
Yeah.
See. But the trouble of it is, 9 times out of 10, you get it too hard. Uh-huh. And it'll break. The point will break off. But we discovered you can take and heat that pick and just stick it down in that damp ground. Uh-huh. And that there would temper it better than any way you could temper it. Hmm. There's a... Bill Mays used to live up here, and he had a... nephew come up there, and he had a back fence off. And he would, I don't know why they called it upset, and you take an old axe when you sharpen the blacksmith shop, hammered out, it's called upsetting axe. Mm-hmm. And he'd upset, and he had a way of tempering it. He'd take a bucket of water, and he'd pour a bunch of oil on that water. Of course, yeah. The oil would stay on top of it.
Uh-huh.
And he'd get a certain heat on it, and he'd temper it in that oil.
Uh-huh.
I tried it, and I almost got burned up. But tempering is pretty hard to do.
Yeah.
And you had to temper about everything, too, because if you shod horses, you had to have the horseshoes come. They had the holes in them, but they had to be punched to fit certain size nails.
Mm-hmm.
And the holes were square, of course. You had a punch, a horseshoe punch, and it was long, slim, square.
Uh-huh.
And if you got the least bit too hard, well, it'd break just too easy. But all the horseshoes, the holes had to be punched out for a certain size nail. Of course, one punch would do it, because a little nail, well, you didn't drive it very far, and a big nail, you drove it down the hip. An axe was usually about the hardest thing to get the right temper, because it's so easy to get it too hard. And if you didn't get hard enough, well, it was so soft it wasn't no good.
Yeah. Would you go by color when you tempered?
Mm-hmm.
To anneal it like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The lighter it was, when you heat it, and you didn't just put it down in water and let it be there, you touched it in water and then pull it back, and as it it would change color.
Yeah.
The blue, it'd be white. It, when it was hard, it'd be real white looking.
Yeah.
Then as the blue come down next to the edge, the blue would come down and take the white away. But if you tempered it a deep light blue, it was always too soft.
Yeah.
You had to have it light color.
Like a straw color.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I did a little bit of tempering when I worked in a machine shop. We'd make something, it had to be hardened or tempered sometimes.
Well, like I say, especially with a mattock or a pick or anything you dug with, you'd heat them just like you'd put them in water, and then there's a kind of a wet place. It wasn't just right boggy, but you just stick them down in there. And it would damper them better than any other way we could figure out.
Hmm. Well, is that old dog Star about to leave us, Clyde?
Well, I'll tell you. The stars are something that I don't know too much about.
Well, I do know when that dog star, when it comes around, then you're in dog days until it.
Yeah.
You can't see that at night. That's right. When you're in dog days, that dog star is about right with the sun.
Yeah, it's dog days is supposed to be over now.
Yeah.
There used to be a rhyme about Ursa Minor and Major. Yeah, was it? Something about the big bear chasing the little bear around the North Star bright. I don't remember how the first of it goes. The big bear chasing the little bear around the North Star bright. Somebody must have a pretty good imagination to see bears in it.
Yeah.
It don't look like a bear to me. It looks more like a dipper.
Yeah.
Lucy used to have a cousin. He used to do this pretty often. Sometimes gave her a week to him. And he knowed all about the stars. He'd wake up 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you'd see him out there in the yard observing the stars.
Huh.
And I used to fox chase. I don't know where you ever fox chase from. I'll be back to my, in the younger days, I used to fox chase. Used to keep a bunch of hounds. And I've been out all hours of the night, but somewhere or other I just never did pay too much attention to the stars.
Mm-hmm. No? What was that?
There used to be a fella up at Strange Creek up there by the name of Old Man George Good. And he had a boy named Norman, and he sent him, made a doctor out of him. Well, Doc, he got hip done fox chasing, and he had, you know, some money, and he ordered down in the South this famous dog. He ordered the very best fox dogs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd call him after he got up, he had an old Model A Ford or Model T, either one. He called him, he'd put his dogs in the back of a car and he'd start coming to your house and he'd know all the ridges and every place and certain places he'd lay his dogs out and then he'd come see about you, you know, and when he went back, the dog would be around the fox. He'd listen at him for hours. But anyway, he kept trying to get his dad to go a fox chasing with him. And his dad, so finally he decided to go. He'd go a fox chasing with him. So they went out and they turned the dog loose, you know, and they got after fox. Nah, man, they just driving up fox like driving a pack. And he said, listen at that heavenly music. The old man listened to him. I can't hear nothing, them old dogs bark. Did you ever chase any?
Not fox, no. I'm coon hunting, but not fox hunting.
Now listen, mister. You go out and go up on one of these ridges someplace and get you a good place to stand and have a good dog and turn them loose. And they get a fox started and there ain't nothing in the world like a dog. A foxhound is bred to run a fox. Usually they won't run nothing else.
Yeah.
And when they get their nose in the fox track, well, this kind of sends them off a deep end.
Yeah.
And you take 7 or 8 or 10 of them are running, and they've got different voices. And they ain't nothing in the world like it. They just ain't nothing like it. Mm. You know, I'd be teaching a singing class, and I'd say, maybe be 10, 15 people. I'd say, now you soured that and you're supposed to do it so and so. You mean to tell me that you could hear me among all these other people? Well, shoot, man, I sat up on the top of a hill and heard 15 or 20 dogs running. I could tell mine, no matter how much racket's going on, I could tell one of them wherever there was.
Yeah.
Everybody else could, too. Anybody else could tell their dog what it was ahead or behind or wherever it was. I used to love it. Because after I got married and started raising the family, I couldn't do it. I quit. But back before that time, I fox chased a lot. Had some mighty good dogs, too. But a foxhound is different than the other dogs. There's small game dogs, and there's coon hound, and there's rabid dogs, and there's all kinds of dogs. But a foxhound runs a fox.
Mm-hmm.
He don't pay no attention to nothing else. Used to be this for a long time, the only foxes there was around was gray foxes. You'd go out and they'd run maybe 2 or 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And certain places over across the river, they used to go clear back over across the river. But they didn't have no automobiles or horses either, we walked.
Yeah.
And there's fox over in there, you get after one of them, they'd run the ball daylight. Old Redmond.
Now, did you ever kill them?
No, I never killed one fox in my life. I didn't. I had traps set in a skunk den in a rock cliff. And I went to look at it one day and there's a fox in it. And I tried to let it loose. I thought I'd let it loose. And I went up, you know, and I thought, I'll just let that attack. And man, that thing liked to eat me up. And I thought, well, I'll settle you down a little bit. And I picked up a little stick and aimed to just kind of tap it on the nose a little bit to, you know, to quiet it down. I hit it right in, blew the eyes there. I didn't hit it hard at all, and it killed it there in 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Their head kind of fragile like.
Yeah.
That's the only one I ever killed. Nobody around here, you know, lots of places they did hunt them, had hounds run them, you know, and they'd shoot them ahead of the hound.
Yeah.
But around here, people never thought about killing one.
Yeah.
So here lately, here in late years, they trap them. The fellas around here catch 6, 8, and 10 every winter. Squirrels, any other kind of meat there is. I don't care too much about beef.
Now, what part of the squirrel do you like?
I like the ham and I like the saddle. That's up there.
Uh-huh.
And I like the gravy. Whenever I have a mess of squirrel, it's always in the fall of the year, of course, and my wife always cooks them down tender and makes gravy in them and cooks sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mr. Manny, talk about something good, squirrel and gravy and sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm. I had a fella come up the holler one day, squirrel hunting, and he said, oh, I eats the heads. He says, I give the squirrel the rest away. He said, I just like the heads. I thought, boy, you'd have to kill a mess of them to get enough.
You know, I've got a friend, he's dead now, but he grew up right up above me here, and we went to school together, and he got off down to Huntington and went to work down there, and he got married and raised family. And anyway, there's a bunch of them. There's a piece of, great big piece of land back over in here, in the age of Gilmer County. It's called a big creek there called Bear Fork. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's big woods in there. It just belongs to some timber company or somebody. Pretty good hunting in there. Well, there's an old guy lived there. Well, he wasn't an old fella at all. He was a dead laid man. And this fella knowed him. And he got a bunch of his friends and come up there 1 year to go squirrel hunt. Well, they all had the very best clothing, you know, and automatic shotguns and all like that. They'd come up in the fella's house and asked him if he was ready to go one morning about daylight. Said, yeah, I'm ready to go. And he came out with an old 22 single shot, all blue and wrapped and rubbed off of it. Now, that's what the man told me this himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my forearm taped on it or something. So they went over, went in these woods, and they said, now, we'll meet a certain place here. We'll scatter out and we'll meet here at noon. Okay. Well, they all took off. Along about noon, they begin coming in. They come in. Maybe one feather had one. Maybe another feather had one. There's 3, 4, or 5 of them. They get it up, and this old Matt boy come in. He had 5 squirrels. They come in, laid them down, you know, and they sit down to eat. One of the fellas was eating his lunch, and he looked at the squirrels, and he picked them up and got to looking at them, and he said, hey, every one of these squirrels was shot in the neck. I said, how did that happen? The old man said, my kids like the heads, and said they'd complain if I shoot them in the head. He had five squirrels, an old single shot 22 rifle, all of them shot in the neck. Mm. And the rest of the fellas maybe had one or two squirrels among them, $300-$400 worth of sod guns and all that stuff.